This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and in the studio with me, Neil McCabe, conservative columnist at townhall.com and editor of the Washington Mercury News site, washingtonmercury.com. And that's a new gig. You know, you did that. This is like the last time you were here. You just started that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's a great little site, and we hope to do some amazing things with it.
Cool. So the president is going to give a State of the Union address tonight, and part of this is about dealing with basically poverty in the United States. I mean, we've got half of all school children in the United States living below the poverty level.
Yes.
This is not a good thing.
It's a terrible thing, and probably we should kickstart that economy and maybe pull some people out of poverty, as we saw in India and China, where liberal economic policies.
Liberal as in
Gladstone.
Deregulated, yeah. Well, I would argue strongly that we would not see – that China would not be the way it is, and India for that matter. Although India took a slightly different path, more electronic, more customer service because they speak English.
I mean, sure.
That was Jack Welch's epiphany in 82, I think it was.
Yeah.
But that basically would have happened without our insane trade policy. But here's just some things that I think the president is trying to address in his State of the Union address tonight. Since 1980, the income of the bottom 90% of Americans has increased $303. This is since Reagan became president, 1%.
Sure.
The top 1%'s income has more than doubled, increasing by about $500,000. But the top 0.1% has quadrupled their income to $22 million. They used to make around $5
million. Well, I mean, the wealthy...
And their taxes have gone down. The Mitt Romney loophole is just hugely, extensively used by people with incomes over $1 million.
Well, the wealthy have done very well under Obama, and I think that's why they support him and his policies.
I'm saying since 1980.
But I think one of the things that you have to remember, Tom, is that, yes, you talk about the 1%, but the people in the 1% isn't always the same. So if you go to some of these Forbes lists of the richest people in America,
well, the Forbes list is not the 1%. That's the 1/100th of 1%.
But still, there's movement there.
1/10,000th of 1%.
And certainly there are family fortunes that dissipate, and then there are new wealthy that come up.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with this. Meanwhile, a full-time worker's wage was 11% lower in 2004 than in 1973, even though their productivity increased 78%. I mean, Reaganomics has flipped our economy on its head. It used to be that as our economy grew and companies did better, companies
sure.
were more profitable, that workers saw.
I mean,
a piece
I remember
the
80s. I mean, I lived through the 80s. I worked in the 80s.
Me too.
The 80s were great for me personally, and they were great for everyone I knew.
The 80s were fine. It takes a decade or two for macroeconomic things like huge tax cuts.
Even though things stalled out under George H.W. Bush in the first term of Clinton, as soon as Newt Gingrich came in, Gingrich and Clinton got together, and then you had another boom in 95. You know,
none of that has to do with personalities. You know that these have to do with things like the Arabs decide to boycott oil, or the internet
sure.
gets rolled out.
Sure, and there are sunspots,
or somebody somebody develops the moves from the transistor to the integrated circuit.
But certainly, if the president was concerned about helping the poor, he would know that the poor don't want handouts. The poor want opportunities, and they want jobs. And they want the opportunity to start their own businesses, and they want and then those people who start new businesses want to hire other people, and then they
I think it's a starting point. The poor would like to stop paying more taxes than the rich. This from the New York Times today, Charles Blow's column. In 2015, the poorest fifth of Americans will pay on average 10.9% of their income in state and local taxes. The middle fifth pay 9%.
Yeah.
The top 1% average 5%. So the top 1% pay a little less than half as much in state and local taxes as the bottom 20% of Americans.
But that's not amounts, though. I mean, like just talking to the federal government, the top 1% pay what, 30 to 40% of the revenues?
It's between 32 and 36% for federal taxes.
But that
number is part of the Rush Limbaugh big lie. I mean, that number
is... No, it's true.
It is in that... And first of all, I think the numbers are a few years old.
It's probably
gotten worse. Who knows? But it doesn't count the fact that, A, the rich are making more than anybody else. They've got more, so they should be paying more taxes. B, most of the truly rich, I mean, those statistics apply to the top 1% or maybe the top 5% or whatever. I mean, they carefully choose the slice they want. If you really want to talk about, to be in the 1% in the United States, you have to make $300,000 a year. That's your brain surgeons, your rocket scientists. That is not the rich. I'm sorry. That's the high end of the upper middle class.
Sure.
You don't see somebody with $300,000 a year income having a 25-bedroom mansion.
I would say that that's basically the Dick Van Dyke Show. That's Rob Petrie in his neighborhood.
Well, yeah,
or dentists
or a
and lawyers,
step above. You know,
you got TV writers.
In today's dollars, Rob Petrie was probably making $150,000 a year.
But
you know, in that neighborhood.
Sure.
My point is that that talking about the 1%, the way that Limbaugh and everybody else does, and how much they pay in taxes, is so disingenuous. It's such a lie because, A, yeah, people making $300,000 a year working with their bodies or their brains, brain surgeons, actually pay a 39% income tax rate. But people making $5 million a year or $1 billion a year, like John Paulson, who made $5 billion in 2010 and paid nothing in income taxes. When you hit those high levels of income in the top 100th of 1%, you're looking at people who are making most of their money in capital gains. The top capital gains rate right now is 23%.
Well, there's a lot of money salted away in family trusts and foundations.
I'm talking about income, not wealth.
But you see, I think, you know, one of the things is that
if you want to talk about wealth, you've got 80 people in the world who own more wealth than 50% of the planet. 80 people.
Sure. And so, but you know,
this is wrong.
But
how can you justify that?
But one of the problems with taxing income is that's new people on the way up. You know, whereas they're so the new money is being taxed as it's being made. And then, of course, you have what the president's going to do tonight is going to propose a new way to tax estates.
Yeah,
which
here,
is
this from the
which I know you adore
from today's Financial Times. The Congressional Budget Office estimated in 2013 that 93% of the benefits from the preferential tax treatment of capital gains, that's how really rich people earn their money, and it doesn't show up in that 36% statistic that Limbaugh and everybody on the right quotes, because they're only quoting payroll, right? They're not quoting capital gains. The CBO estimates in 2013 that 93% of the benefits from the preferential tax treatment of capital gains flowed to the richest 20% of Americans, and a full 68% of the benefits went to the top 1%. And then they say, you know, money raised from the changes in the way capital gains are taxed would be funneled into initiatives to ease the tax burden on the middle class, provide a new credit for families where both spouses work, for example, and expand the incentives for child care. What's wrong with that? Why should Mitt Romney not pay the exact same income tax rate that the guy who cuts his hair does?
Well, I think capital gains has to be a separate category, but I think
not a separate category because it's how most rich people take their money.
But if you're just going to tax money as money, then drop the capital gains rate and then drop everybody.
No, you tax income as income. Capital gains is income, just like labor is.
Well, we like capital. We do want people to invest.
No, if people are going to invest, whether capital gains, you know, Reagan actually is the saint of this. And in 1986, he equalized them. Capital gains and ordinary income were the exact same rate.
Would you take the 86 deal again?
No, because it was 28%. It was stupid. But at least he got capital gains from 20% up to 28%, while he took ordinary income from 74% down to 28%.
But the other amazing thing that he did, Tom, is that by getting rid of all of – by flattening things out
– he destroyed the American middle class.
Well, he also put lobbyists out of business and all the people who sell
tax
rates.
That's why there's not
– The reason why
– 35 – you know, there were only 800 registered lobbyists in this town when Reagan came into town. There's 34,000
now. The reason why you want tax rate to be high – is because nobody really pays those high rates, and then you can sell the
people,
rates.
Because
deferred compensation. Even in the 50s, there was deferred compensation.
Hang on just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Neil McCabe is with us. You going to stick around?
Absolutely, sure.
Okay. Washington, thewashingtonmercury.com. We'll be right back. So feel free.
Let me just ask you, Tom. When you're talking about those numbers... how much of that number for the regressiveness of the taxes is because of the payroll taxes and the Social Security and the Medicaid and that stuff? You know, because I think everyone is really thrilled when they get their first job at McDonald's or the supermarket or summer camp. I know I was when I thought you know, at Boy Scout camp, I thought I had earned $50 for 8 weeks, and I found out that, you know, I actually got a check for $33 at the end of my 8 weeks.
Well, and this is you know, Charles Blow has a great piece in today's New York Times about this, Neil, called How Expensive It Is to Be Poor. And he points out that, you know, poor people are paying taxes. Here's the piece, if you're interested.
Sure.
Poor people are paying taxes on the first dollar they earn. And, you know, rich people are not.
Well, gasoline, and how about sales tax?
Yeah. I mean, how many people? All of these things are regressive. They're hits. But here's this is Leslie Uphold has this piece in Alternate today. This is the one I thought I'd printed out, but apparently I didn't. But he says, during World War II, all income over $2.6 million in today's dollars was taxed at a 94% rate. He says, think about that for a minute. Basically, this rate served as a cap on elite compensation. After banksters hit $2.6 million, they received only 6 cents on the dollar. In 1956, during the conservative Eisenhower administration, it was still that tax rate was 91% of all income over $3.4 million. So they raised the threshold from 2.6 to $3.4 million. In 76, 70 cents of every dollar of income over $807,000 went to federal income tax. And the net effect of this was that the CEO lived next door to the people that they worked with. He might have had a nicer house, but he didn't have, you know, it wasn't like.
Listen, we've had this conversation before. The CEOs were not living in that neighborhood.
Well, maybe not of the 1,000 largest corporations in America, but there used to be, every town in America used to have hundreds of small businesses. They don't anymore. Now you've got, you know, all these chain businesses, and you've got basically employees. So there's no CEOs in most towns.
Well, it's almost, I don't know if it's like the corn laws or forced collectivization, but there has been a sort of wiping out of this sort of yeoman businessman, even with dry cleaners. They're rolling up the dry cleaners.
It started in 1982 when Reagan said we're not going to enforce the Sherman Act anymore.
Well,
we're going to allow come on, Neil, you lived through the 90s.
Yes.
We are going to allow virtually unlimited mergers and acquisitions. And what happened?
Well,
Michael Milken and a whole bunch of people came out, and they even invented a new category, M&A artists. Remember the M&A artists, mergers and acquisitions?
Well, yeah,
guys?
But you can put things together, and you can break them apart, and you get a commission on each side. But for
which
instance,
is what they were doing, but what you're doing in the process
stations.
Is putting small businesses
but
out of business.
But look at, like, take like gas stations. It was the policy of the Clinton administration to wipe out the small independent gas stations because it was easier to enforce the environmental laws when these things are run by corporations or they were larger.
No,
and that was just a set policy.
You can't say that – I mean, nobody in the Clinton administration ever said,
yes,
let's wipe out small gas stations.
I didn't say wipe out, but they
said –
That's
what you just said.
It was their – in effect, what their policy was. They did not want the small independent gas station. And where are the small independent gas stations? They're gone.
Well, I think that they're gone because the gas companies, the companies that are selling gasoline, have said, hey, you know, if we have smaller outlets. This goes back to Reagan again. Before 1982, you had four gas stations on every corner because they were competing. You had a dozen American oil companies. Now you've got two.
How can you say there was nothing in the 80s or under Reagan that was against competition?
Yes, there absolutely was.
Competition was booming.
The Sherman Act.
There were new businesses all the time.
The Sherman Act is what protected competition. It's prevented monopoly.
The competition protects competition.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Neil McCabe in the studio with us. Where did I've been moving my papers around, so I don't have your – here it is right here.
I'm just going to start weeping at the fate of all of these trees. How many trees do you think were felled? How many homeless owls are every day because of the Tom Hartman show?
You're talking about all the paper on my desk. What this proves, Neil, is that we need to legalize hemp. You know? Because if this stuff was grown out of hemp, it would be no big deal. I mean, it's just like, you know, the first draft of the Declaration of Independence, right?
It was written on hemp paper for our Navy.
There you go. Rope for the Navy. So anyhow, what we're talking about here. Oh,
we're talking about how Obama is crushing the people with taxes and regulation. It's going to be more of the same.
Yeah, okay. That's, you know, we both read the Republican talking points. And by the way, how much do you want to bet that Joni Ernst does not mention the fact that her family took over $400,000 in farm price supports? In other words, welfare for farmers.
I'm more concerned that if she really is a colonel in the National Guard, she should probably get that haircut in standard.
Yeah.
Because her hair is way out of control for a colonel.
Well, what can you say? I'm also wondering if she's going to castrate a member of the Senate tonight. We'll see.
Well, I think okay. it's, the speaker's already been castrated.
The Progressive Change Institute, PCI, has conducted
great bunch of kids.
Their Big Ideas Project after 1 million votes were cast by the public on 2,600 ideas. And so I just wanted to share these with you.
Sure.
You know, this is, by the way, these have been reviewed by
Reed, well.
Warren, Tester, Schumer, Franken, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Here we go. Number one, now is the time to expand Social Security, not cut it. We're facing a retirement crisis where seniors can't rely on pensions and other parts of the social contract.
Wow. How about creating more workers? What are the workers now? 1.5 for every retired?
It's not even close. It's in the neighborhood of 5 or 6 to 1.
Okay.
I mean, it was 20 to 1 in 1935.
So let's go back to that. Instead of basically, it's kind of a Ponzi scheme.
Well, no. What we did was we doubled the taxation on the boomer generation in 1982 as a result of Reagan's reform of Social Security.
He
doubled
his bipartisan reform.
Yeah. No.
Sure.
It was Tip O'Neill. I mean, you know, who put the thing together along with Alan Greenspan. But you know, the boomers are the only generation in the history of Social Security to not only pay for the retirement of their parents, but also set aside a savings account for their own retirement. So it's not a Ponzi scheme. There's $2.7 trillion sitting in that account, which Pete Peterson can't wait to get his hands on.
Well, we should unlock that and allow people to take control of their own Social Security, like David Cameron's trying to do in England. And apparently Obama thinks Cameron's the greatest.
Yeah, that works so well for all those people who had 501ks in 2008, right? And they were just starting to retire just as their 501k dropped or 401k
dropped. Where's the market now, Tom?
Where's
the market now?
Yeah, well, if you're retiring this week, but that's the point. You know, if your retirement is not, you know, it's
next point.
Not a good
idea.
Okay, number two. Corporations are paper, not people.
Well, I mean, who owns them? It's people. People
right.
own them.
Right. So you regulate the behavior of the corporation, but you give the freedom of speech to the people.
I would like to see the Justice Department start going after people, frankly.
Yeah, okay.
I mean,
we can agree on that. Number three, tax equality. It means that 100% of everyone's income is taxed for Social Security, not just working class people. This is what you were talking about when you earned the $50 that
year. Well,
there's
two sides of it, because first you get whacked when you know, percentage-wise with your first job. But also you max out. So very, very wealthy people throughout the year, they hit that max.
That 118,000, yeah. And after that, they pay nothing. So aren't you a fan of flat taxes?
I'm huge on the flat tax, Tom.
Then why not flat tax Social Security? Why shouldn't Bill Gates pay the exact same percentage that I pay or you pay or anybody else pays?
I'm actually very sympathetic to that.
So you're with the Progressive Change Group.
If only because it makes the wealthiest, most powerful people in America angry. And then we can maybe end Social Security.
Okay. All right. So I get your logic. All right. Decentralize the funding of political campaign through matching funds, democracy vouchers to every voter. So the Congress depends on all of us and not just on the tiny 1% who now effectively fund their campaigns.
How about getting the government out of running the government? The government should not be deciding who the government is.
What? I don't.
The government has no business regulating elections. Regulating like this campaign finance and everything like that. And the government shouldn't be subsidizing campaigns.
But you think a handful of billionaires do have that business?
Well, work for Eugene McCarthy.
What does that
mean? Work for Jack Kennedy. I mean, there were wealthy people who have financed campaigns in the past. If you make an argument and you win, then who cares how you got your money?
Well, it depends on what the argument is,
because
how disingenuous it is. And by the way, advertising does work. There's a reason why Procter & Gamble spends $1 billion a year in advertising.
But
they want to sell more Prel. You know, it works. And when you sell a candidate, if you've got a bigger ad budget, you're going to sell that candidate
more
successfully.
But over and over again, we have the examples of an Eric Cantor or President Phil Graham.
Those are the outliers, and you know that. You know,
but they exist. It happened.
Right.
It's not like I made it up. It did happen.
So you think that we should continue with a system where wealthy people fund campaigns and then, I mean,
that's the way it always has been.
No, it's not. It's actually not. And you know, I mean,
our first presidents were very wealthy men. Our first congressmen, very wealthy men.
Thomas Jefferson died in bankruptcy. So did George Washington.
He lived a very rich life. He borrowed a ton of money.
He lived well, but
because of the value of his...
He was a country squire compared to the genuinely wealthy.
But you and I both know that at the eve of the revolution, he was like one of the wealthiest men in America.
He was not. Actually,
he was.
The wealthiest man in America.
Carol?
The wealthiest man who signed the Declaration was John Hancock. And his net worth, his total net worth at that time in today's dollars was $700,000. These guys were the upper middle class of their day.
Well, but, all right, he was a smuggler. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. And the oil depletion allowance. Stop subsidizing the oil industry.
I'm very nervous about what's being called subsidies for the oil industry. It has margins of it's running margins of what 9 or 10%. You take deductions. You know, you pay taxes on income, and there are each industry has different rules to figure out what's income and not income.
At least let's do what Alaska does and tax that oil when it comes out of the ground because it belongs to the state. And do like Sarah Palin did. I mean, her family got $40,000 from the state of Alaska Permanent Fund the year that she was running for vice president.
I think that Alaska is a unique situation.
So you don't want socialism for Alaska is fine, but not for everybody else. I was actually up in Anchorage and I was interviewing the newly elected Republican mayor.
Oh.
And I said, what do you think about this permanent fund? He says, it's great. And I said, so a little socialism is fine. He goes, yeah. The next day, the headline in the Anchorage paper, mayor says I like socialism. He was totally
the red mayor of Anchorage.
Yeah, right. Neil McCabe, TheWashingtonMercury.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 202-536-2370.
Townhall.com, TheWashingtonMercury.com. Neil, thanks for being here today.
Super
to see you, as always.
Enjoy the speech tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A couple of interesting pieces in today's New York Times. Tonight is the State of the Union address. The president is going to be addressing some very, very modest proposals to raise the middle class and take a very, very tiny bite out of the butts of the very, very rich. I mean, a tiny, tiny bite compared to, what tax rates were before Ronald Reagan. This is fascinating, though. There's a piece. This is over at Les Leopold over an alternate. He talks about where all the money is that's stashed in the offshore tax havens. The United States, 49% of the global total. Next up is China, 6%, Germany, 4%, United Kingdom, 3%. We are 49%. Of our billionaires stashing their money overseas? These are people with more than $50 million in wealth. According to the Public Interest Research Group, U.S. PIRG, we're losing about $184 billion a year due to corporate and individual offshore tax evasion. Now, that said, and by the way, usually every year on State of the Union Day, you know, I say, what would you like to hear the president say in a State of the Union address tonight? And today is no exception. I'd love if you have something that you think that the president should be saying tonight, although I think it's pretty much cast in stone, it would be fascinating to hear your thoughts on that. My thoughts on it are twofold. Number one, I think that his proposals are modest because he is still in the mode of maybe I can make this work. And maybe he can. I mean, who knows? Maybe he's doing it the right way. If I were president, dream on, right? If I were president, I would be shooting for the moon. I would just come right out and say, the Republicans. I would pull a Harry Truman. I would say the Republicans are the party of the rich and powerful. They always have and they always will be. We need to stop listening to them. We need to stop electing them. They represent the interests of fewer than 1% of Americans. And the Democrats, because of changes in campaign finance laws brought about in large part by the Supreme Court, the Democrats increasingly are having to deal with the pressure of needing to raise massive amounts of money to get elected. And that's distorting the Democratic Party's traditional values. And in net, the whole thing is that America is going down the tubes, or at least the American middle class is going down the tubes, because of policies and laws made by the Supreme Court and by Republicans, and because of Reaganomics. And if I was doing the State of the Union, I'd say, okay, that's it for Reaganomics. I'm declaring war on Reaganomics. We are going to take America back to where it was when it was prosperous. So. Anyhow, that's my take on it. This other piece, and just apropos of this, Ashley Parker writing in today's New York Times, Koch seminar is early proving ground for Republican hopefuls. When Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky went to Kansas last year to campaign for Governor Sam Brownback, he quietly requested a private meeting with oil billionaire Charles Koch. Similarly, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas popped through Wichita in October for an audience he had requested. And Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey has worked to cultivate a relationship with the younger Mr. Koch, stopping by his Manhattan office, calling him to talk politics and socialize with him, their wives included. And then here's the kicker. And this is why we need campaign finance reform. I mean, do you really want two cranky billionaire brothers running the politics of a nation? Perhaps no nation, no organization, writes Ashley Parker in today's New York Times, perhaps no organization commands more deference in Republican politics nowadays than the sprawling operation established by the Koch brothers. And this week, the intense competition among Republicans for their embrace and attention will break out into the open. An invitation-only group of 2016 hopefuls will travel to a resort near Palm Springs, California, for the Koch brothers' annual winter seminar, kicking off the so-called Koch primary. These guys have a political machine that rivals the Republican Party. Is that the American way? Somehow I think that Jefferson, Washington, Madison, even Alexander Hamilton, who was a big believer in aristocracy, would be horrified by this. But then, what do I know? Anyhow, PETA in Goshen, New Hampshire. Hey, PETA, what's up?
Oh, hi. Two things. One that I'd like to see the president bring up, which I'm sure he won't, are the amendments to bills that sort of sneak past. And one was the provision attached to the National Defense Authorization Act, which funds the U.S. Department. And U.S. Defense Department, I'm sorry. And it handed over a large tract of the Tonto National Forest to Resolution Copper.
Right.
And that's 2,400 acres of ancestral homeland to the Apache Native.
Yeah, it's called Apache Tears, that land.
Yeah, and then they also, other land deals were 70,000 acres of the Tongass National Forest.
You know, John McCain slipped in that Apache Tears deal to steal land from the Apaches and give it to, of all things, an Australian mining company, Rio Tinto. This is obscene. Yeah, I agree.
One other thing I just wanted to say about the rich that you've been talking about. I've been listening to Fox News.
Oh, my.
And a lot of the Republicans coming onto Fox News and the House of Representatives are saying, when will people understand that the rich are the people that give jobs to the American people? And what I can't understand is why nobody differentiates between the individual wealth and corporate wealth. It's the corporations providing jobs, and if a CEO's salary is cut from $30 million down to $5 million, how the heck does that affect the job hiring process for the corporation?
PETA, we need to change the frame. Corporations don't provide jobs. Corporations exploit labor. Corporations convert labor into profit. The only reason that a corporation is going to pay somebody $40,000 a year is because they're going to make $50,000 a year from that person working for them. The only reason they'll pay somebody $200,000 a year is because they're going to make $300,000 from that person working for them. Corporations hire people to be able to function as a corporation. They don't give jobs. They don't provide jobs. They don't create jobs. They don't make jobs. What creates the demand for the goods and services provided by corporations, which essentially forces corporations to hire more workers, is not fat cats, not rich people. It's average working people. It's the people and poor people, people who spend 100% of their income. They create demand, and demand is what drives economies. We've got to stop using this
language. I agree with you, Tom, and that's why I feel that taxing the rich, a rich man's individual wealth, is absolutely fair and square.
Yeah. Yeah, and it will not hurt demand because, you know, if the Koch brothers go from being worth $80 billion down to being worth $30 billion, which, you know, ain't going to happen any day soon, they're not going to buy more toilet paper. They're not going to buy more clothes. They're not going to buy more cars. They're going to reduce the size of the balance in their Swiss bank accounts or that kind of thing. So, yeah, excellent point, PETA. Thank you for calling and sharing it. Rob in Iron Mountain, Minnesota. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Not much, Tom. It's where, you know, like you grew up during the same time I did. It's where 60s, 70s,
yeah.
50s I was born. But it was where, you know, I mean, again, don't remember much about it. But, you know, Acropole with everything that you've been talking about right here. During that time, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, what's the biggest difference from then until now?
Well, back then, after you made $3 million a year, your tax rate went up to 94%. You made 6 cents on the dollar. And so basically nobody took an income of over $3 million a year. And we didn't see, you know, there are, if you think back to the 50s, 60s, 70s, there were no conspicuous sudden billionaires. There were no Bill Gateses. There were no, who's the guy who runs Facebook? People were starting businesses. People were building businesses, but they were, and they were getting wealthy, but wealthy back then meant you made $3 million a year, not you made $3 million a day.
Yeah, it hurt my feelings now because you figured it out again, because I was just basically going to say that during that time there were no billionaires. You know, I mean, the job creators were the people and we had the jobs. You know, I mean, there wasn't that big of a deficit. Yes, we took and we went after wars that we weren't supposed to, but it was a pretty good time overall. You know, I mean,
yep.
Compared to now, it's where, you know, like, I mean, let's face it, it's where if we outlawed billionaires, it wouldn't hurt anybody, would it?
No. In fact, we used to have, I think it croaked, but we used to have a website called NoBillionaires.com where we were basically saying, hey, let's create a wealth tax on all wealth over $1 billion, because shouldn't somebody be able to live on $1 billion? I mean, how much do you need? So now, obviously, there are, you know, for businesses or privately held companies, you'd have to have an exception for that. But it's still there? Oh, cool. Okay. So, Rob, excellent point. Thank you for the call. Daniel in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Daniel.
Hi, Tom. Big fan.
Thank you. What's up?
I wanted to say, with the help the president says, is that this what am I doing with the TPP? I mean, haven't I learned my lesson? This Korean deal, we're losing $50 billion a year in jobs to Korea and putting Americans into direct competition with slave labor. I mean, don't I see the corporate interests where they can – corporations can have all the benefits of an industrialized society, yet get around them and just keep the money they stole from the manufacturers? What am I doing? I mean, I'm prescribing, you know, some small nice things, free community college and tax reform, but the underlying surgery are the trade agreements.
I totally agree. I would love to hear President Obama. In fact, I would love to hear him take it a step further. I would love to hear him say, you know, we're not going to do the TPP. I've had second thoughts on this. And we're going to roll back all the trade agreements going all the way back to most favored nation status under Nixon. It's really time for us to get back to protecting our domestic industries the way Alexander Hamilton set it up in 1793. Daniel, thank you so much for the call. We'll be back 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Somehow, though, I suspect that's not something we're going to hear. But I think there's going to be some good stuff in the speech tonight. I really do. I'm looking for it. And welcome back. Let's see here. Sherman, watching Free Speech TV in Inglewood, California. Hey, Sherman, what's on your mind? Sherman, you are on the air. You're watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. You have to listen to your phone because there's about a 30-second delay or so between...
Hello.
Yeah, okay. We're on the air.
I want you to know I've read your book, Crash of 2016, and I was in your audience when you appeared in Santa Monica.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
Okay,
nice
now...
Nice to hear from you.
I think the president's proposal to, support... junior college education finance is good, but it doesn't go far enough.
Yeah.
And what the person who would take this further is Elizabeth Warren, and I wish that her book were in your background above the crash of 2016, A Fighting Chance by Elizabeth Warren. But, you know.
Go ahead. If you're listening to your TV, it's going to totally confuse you. You got to turn down the TV. So you were saying, Sherman? You said, but.
Oh yeah, I was born in 1931, so I lived through the Roosevelt administration and the New Deal.
Wow.
And Henry Ford and I was living in Detroit on his own initiative. Raised the wages to $5 a day.
Right, from $1.
That forced the other industries to also raise their wages.
Yep.
And the Ford Motor Company prospered.
You're right.
By paying their workers more. And I was in a community where many people were working at Ford's. And even though I was just a child, I can recall that things were getting better and better throughout the New Deal. Yep. And I think it's a shame that Roosevelt was bad-mouthed so much, and somehow we don't have schools named after Franklin Roosevelt. We've got one Roosevelt High School here in Los Angeles County, but it's named after Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, that's interesting, the Republican. Yeah, there's a, you know, the Reagan Legacy Project was put together by a bunch of very wealthy Republicans after Reagan left office to try to name a building or a road or a bridge, some consequential landmark, or build or put up a statue in a conspicuous place in every single county in the United States and in every single country in the world. And they have done so much to whitewash and polish and frankly lie about the legacy of Ronald Reagan. It's astonishing. And there was no FDR Legacy Project. People like yourself who are old enough to remember FDR, by and large, absolutely loved him. I mean, he was real. He was elected president four times. It doesn't get any better than that. But he took on the rich people. So there was no, you know, group of rich people who said, hey, let's get together and put up a monument everywhere. And it's really a shame. Sherman, thank you for the call. And thanks for sharing your recollections and experience with us. I appreciate it. It is 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back. Before the hour, what would you like to hear in the State of the Union address? Jason in Arlington, Virginia. What would you like to hear, Jason?
I'd just like to see the president come out and say, look, we put this ethanol subsidy in, passed by Al Gore, which is an environmental disaster. We grow an area the size of North Carolina to stick in gas tanks, and we're going to end it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And here's the other problem with the ethanol subsidy is that the ethanol subsidy is basically a corn subsidy. And when you combine that with the corn subsidies for sugar, for high fructose corn syrup coming out of sugar, which is the reason why the United States moved from cane sugar to this new chemical. It's not a naturally occurring compound, high fructose corn syrup. It is driving an epidemic of obesity and type 2 diabetes and cancer. And God only knows what kinds of diseases. In my opinion, in this country, I may be wrong. I'm not a scientist, but it certainly looks that way to me. And yeah, do away with all the subsidies. Joni Ernst, who's giving the Republican rebuttal tonight, her family took almost $500,000 from the federal government in welfare for farmers. You know, she might do a great job of cutting the balls off pigs, but she is a welfare queen extraordinaire, and I'm just astonished that the Republicans put that person up for their, you know, to give their. She actually is a welfare queen, right? I mean, $400,000+ that's pretty good. Winston in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Winston, what's up?
Hi, good afternoon, Tom. I just wish to make a comment that I think Neil McCabe, the general who had great difficulty defending his positions, I think, he said that we ought not be concerned about, you know, how people made their money as long as they're rich. I think we ought to be because we have people like, let's say, the guy Madoff, who made billions, and he was a crook. Should we not be concerned about how people make their money?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a moral question.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And you look at, you know, banksters who made their money basically hustling home loans to people who couldn't afford them, and now they're doing it with car loans and student loans. You've got, I mean, there's no shortage of, you know, the payday lending industry is just astonishing. The horrible rip off that they do, where people borrow $500 and end up paying back $2,000, and they're still in debt. It's not. You're absolutely right, Winston. Excellent point. Thank you for that. Chris in Minneapolis. Hey, Chris, thanks for listening to 950 AM. What's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? I finally found somebody I kind of agree with you on, the subsidies for corn.
Pardon?
I said I finally found something that we kind of agree on, the subsidies for corn.
Okay.
But I wanted to talk to you. You talk about, I'm not sure how much time you're going to give me, but you always mention about corporations shipping jobs overseas. But then you turn around and say that corporations don't create jobs. Well, that's not true. Corporations do create jobs. I mean, look at what Bill Gates did, Steve Jobs, Henry Ford. All of those are people that...
No, wait a second, Chris. Wait a second.
Yep.
If nobody bought Bill Gates' product, how many people would he have hired?
Nobody.
Okay. So Bill Gates didn't create jobs. The people who bought his products did.
But he created the product that people wanted.
Right. Well, you know, you've got to do that, but that doesn't... But that doesn't mean, you know, and not only that, Bill Gates is a welfare queen. The reason why Microsoft has such a lock on the market is because they're using patent, copyright, and trademark laws, which are basically monopoly laws. They lock out competitors.
That's fine. But the point, but your point is wrong about corporations not creating jobs. I own my own company. I create jobs by doing it. I took a risk, started my own company, and hired people.
So do I.
Okay. But if you weren't there, somebody else would be there to do it.
Maybe not. I mean, I just don't know. I have started seven businesses in my life, five of them successful and two of them really successful, and one that just went down in flames. I'm somewhat familiar with how this works, and I know that if I don't have customers for my product,
you created the vehicle to hire people. You created the vehicle to hire people. If it wasn't for what you did as a person, those people wouldn't have jobs.
And
took the risk, if nobody like me or you took a risk to take.
But that is no reason to deify me and give me a lower tax rate. And the fact of the matter is that I don't get a lower tax rate because I'm the owner of a small business like you are. Chris, let me finish. I'm guessing you and I are both small business owners, and I'm guessing, therefore, neither one of us can take our income in the form of capital gains. And so we both take our income as salaries, so we're both subject to a maximum 39% tax rate rather than a maximum 23% tax rate if it was capital gains. Mitt Romney has the Mitt Romney loophole. There's something fundamentally wrong with that.
Well, okay, we're talking about something completely separate now. I did talk about that. Probably talk about corporations creating jobs, but President Obama paid, 18% interest on his taxes? So you can't say that just Mitt Romney did.
Well, that's the point. I mean, you know, while Republicans are cutting back on the budget for the Internal Revenue Service, so if you try to call the IRS to get advice on how do you do your taxes, you could be on hold for a half a day right now because Republicans have cut their budget so badly. And however, anybody who's got an income of over $100,000, $150,000 a year in this country and can afford to have a CPA, they don't have to worry about that. And that's the Republican rationale. You know, yeah, sure, we'll cut the IRS because the only people who turn to the IRS for help doing their taxes are people in the, you know, people making less than $50,000, $60,000 a year who can't afford the cost of a CPA. Or, I mean, even, I don't know what H&R Block charges these days, but, you know, in any case, it's crazy. Chris, thank you for the call. Terry in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Terry, just a minute to the break. You had a suggestion about infrastructure?
I question what he said about, I heard it on the news, that it's going to be a private-public cooperation, and when cities and towns are struggling to meet their budgets, they don't need a loan that they're going to have to pay back. Or what are they going to do, sell the town if the economy changes? In North Carolina, they brought in some Spanish company to do road work, and they're talking about toll roads.
Yeah.
And that money's going to go to Spain.
I understand. And that's by the way, happening all over the country. And not just with roads, but also with water systems, electric systems, and septic systems, all things that should be considered public infrastructure rather than private profit opportunities. I don't disagree with you. That said, I think what President Obama is proposing is bonds. And public-private with regard to bonds is a little bit of verbal jujitsu. You could argue that the Treasury Department right now is public-private because private individuals buy treasuries, in other words, loan money to the government, and then the government uses that money to do things. And in this case, they would be issuing bonds for infrastructure. So I don't think it's going to be quite as pernicious as you say, but let's wait and see, A, and B, it doesn't matter anyway because the Republicans won't let it get passed through Congress. Terry, thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And I wanted to get your thoughts on a completely different topic. This has very little to do with politics, and I think everything to do with American popular culture. There is a woman by the name of Lenore Skenazy, and I may be mispronouncing that, S-K-E-N-A-Z-Y. Maybe it's Skenazy. I'm not sure. She's a mother of two in New York City. She is referred to as the America's worst mom because she wrote a newspaper column somewhere between bragging and asserting that living in New York City, she wanted her 9-year-old son to know how to use the subway system. She taught him how to use the subway system, and she now lets him ride the subway alone. Everybody freaked out. And part of that freak out then resulted, you know, led to her writing a book called Free Range Kids, How to Raise Self-Reliant Children. And she actually has now a TV show that's on the Discovery Life Channel where she's helping bubble-wrapped kids come out of the bubble wrap. You know, like there was one of the stories that they talk about in one of the first episodes of the series, 10-year-old Sam, his mom wouldn't let him ride a bike. Oh, I'm afraid he'll fall and get hurt. His mother wouldn't let him cut up his own meat. Well, he shouldn't be eating meat. I mean, everybody should be a vegan, but nonetheless, mom thinks I'll cut my fingers off. And he was not allowed to play rough sports like skating. And Sam says, I just want to do things by myself. The point, Peter Gray, a research psychologist at Boston College, says that the actual rate of strangers abducting or molesting children is very small, more likely to happen at the hands of relatives or family friends. And the statistics since the 50s, well, here's a quote from the New York Times, this piece by in the personal health, Jane Brody on health and aging, Jane Brody writing for the New York Times. She says, experts say there is no more crime against children by strangers today and probably significantly less than when I was growing up in the 40s and 50s, a time when I walked to school alone and played outdoors with friends unsupervised by adults. Now, let me, you know, first of all, in the 40s and 50s, the population of the United States was half of what it is right now. But there's no more crime now than there was then, particularly with regard to kids. And if anything, it's gone down. And, I mean, I remember growing up in the 50s. I was born in 51. When I was a child, right, when I was 6 years old and I went to, when I was 5 years old, kindergarten, 6 years old, first grade. We were living on Cleveland Avenue, and I was going to, I'm forgetting the name of the school, but it was some school in Lansing, Michigan, and I had to walk about a half a mile to and from school. And the first week or so of school, my mom walked me to school every day, and she was there waiting for me to pick me up when we came home. We walked back home. We did not have two cars. My dad drove to work. And then after 2 weeks or so, mom knew that I had it figured out. And as a six-year-old, a first grader, you know, I walked a half a mile through downtown Lansing, Michigan to go to school. I walked 4 miles to go to junior high school. Both ways. 8 miles altogether. I say this to my kid. Years ago, my kids, when they were younger, we were in Michigan, and I was like, you know, I walked 4 miles every day, even in the snow, even in the winter, to go to school and all the way back. And they're like, yeah, right, Dad. So we stopped at my parents' house, set the odometer to zero, you know, the trip meter, and drove to Walter French Junior High School where I went. And it was 4 miles, like 3.8, something like that, but close. Nobody thought twice about it. School got out. Everybody was walking. My friend Bill Thomas and I used to, when we were 7, 8, 9 years old, Bill got a BB gun, and we used to go down. There was this pond that was, it was at least a mile from where we lived. There was a forest where a river went, it was a large creek or a small river went through it. I don't think it was big enough to have a name, or if it did, I never knew the name. We'd go down there and we'd dig up crayfish the first week that Bill had his gun, we went down and we shot frogs. And then I don't remember if Bill said it or I. My recollection is that Bill said it. He said, "What if God is keeping track of all the frogs we kill?" And we had like this serious theological discussion about it. We both went to the Methodist church down the street from us, and we decided, okay, we're not going to shoot any more frogs. And from that point to this, you know, I've not shot any living thing since that point, since I was 7 or 8 or 9 years old, however old it was. But we grew up outdoors. Louise and her brother used to bicycle, I mean, literally across Michigan. They would go on bicycle trips that were like 3, 4, 5 hours, where they would travel 30, 40 miles. My friend Clark and I hopped a train in Lansing and ended up in Grand Rapids and went to and then hitchhiked over to my, and this is when we were 14 years old, and ended up at my Aunt Marilyn's house. Now, my parents were not happy about that, but nobody arrested them for not being bad parents. Nobody arrested me. My Aunt Marilyn cut my hair off. It was hysterical, but God bless her. I love her. She's still around. And the older sister of my father. But it's like we lived out in the world. And now we've got these bubble-wrapped kids and these helicopter parents, and the consequence of this is that everybody's afraid. Kids are not getting any physical activity. Obesity is 60% higher than it was than when I was a kid. And, you know, I go into this conversation with a certain amount of trepidation, just like, you know, when Neil and I were talking about the 60s or the 80s, rather. Neil is younger than I am. He doesn't remember the 60s. He might not have even been around in the 60s, but I remember the 60s and the 50s. And there's a certain amount of, back when I was a young whippersnapper, you know, I don't want to sound like that guy, right? I remember when I was a kid, my grandfather talking about, well, things were better when I was young. You know, these kids today, they've gone to hell. Look at this long hair, they're smoking pot. You know, that kind of stuff. Only he said it with a Norwegian accent. I don't want to sound like that. But that said, I really think we're screwing up our child rearing practices. And then on top of that, this just in the, you know, I live in Washington, D.C. here. Maryland is right next door. And this from Fox News, of all places, a Maryland couple that believes in free range parenting. That's what it's called. That's what my mother and father did. Right. I mean, I would leave if I was home. If I wasn't home by dark, my mom would get upset. I'd get in trouble. And there was, I remember one time when I was around 10 that I had stayed over at my friend Jerry Stamsky's house way, way too long. And as I was walking home, my mom was riding my bicycle up the street, crying, looking for me. I'll always remember that. It horrified me that I had so frightened my mom. But I mean, I was really late. It was like 10 or 11 at night, and I was a little kid. And that was it. So anyhow, a Maryland couple that believes in free-range parenting said that they are being investigated for child neglect after police picked up their kids, ages 6 and 10, walking home alone from a park. And the Montgomery County Child Protective Services reportedly followed up and forced the parents to sign a safety plan, acknowledging that they would not let the kids go unsupervised. I used to run a community for abused kids in New Hampshire. The first kid we did intake on was the daughter of her father by her sister. The second kid we did intake on had been tied to a pole in the basement with his brother. His brother starved to death. The neighbors smelled his brother's rotting body and called the police, and they rescued Tony, and he got placed in the facility that Louise and I had started. That's child abuse. Child abuse is not letting your kids walk 3 blocks home from the park to your house. Or do you think I'm wrong? You know the number. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And by the way, if you'd like to pitch in and help out with that program that Louise and I started, go to hunterschool.org. They could use a little help there. Shano says he walked to school. How far? About a mile. And in the 70s, because you're what, 15 years younger than me, or more or less? Almost 20 years younger than me? Yeah. So, you know, yeah. So we... Geez, time flies, huh? What a future you have ahead of you. Okay, so we've got a lot of calls. People also want to get in and talk about the State of the Union, so we'll pick up those calls as well. And apropos of that, Jim in Vida, Montana. Hey, Jim, you wanted to weigh in? Jim, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Vida, Montana. You are on the air, sir. Hey, Jim. Okay, you got to listen. Yeah, oh, there you go. Okay. You got to turn down, when you call in, you need to turn down your TV and just listen to the telephone. What's up, Jim?
Okay, sorry, I'd like to see the president say Keystone will not happen.
I'm with you.
I'm out here in eastern Montana in the town of Glendive on the Yellowstone River is having an oil spill right now.
Right.
About 50,000 gallons oil in the drinking water. The governor has declared a state of emergency. The pipeline is owned by a company called Bridger. And the thing is, it's the exact same town where Keystone is scheduled to cross the Yellowstone.
Oh,
Glendive,
man.
Montana.
Oh, man.
Now, this is the second big spill we've had in the Yellowstone since 2011.
Yeah. No, that's incredible. Jim, thank you very much for sharing that with us. I agree with you. Say no to Keystone. That would be great. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I ran around loose as a child, too. It taught me freedom. Taught
yeah.
me think.
Yeah, I agree. And nothing wrong with a little physical activity.
They don't want you having children who grow up to think they might be independent.
Yes. They might be fearless. They might not be vulnerable to George Bush going, they're going to get you, they're going to get you. You know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Anyway. Back
at
to you.
At the time, we didn't know that we should have run past the Catholic school, but we got up on Saturdays, did our chores, packed our peanut butter sandwich in our plastic army canteen, and took off.
Yep. I did the same thing. I mean, my brother Steve and I, who was the closest to me both in age and, you know, just mostly through our childhood, you know, we would get up early on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning and literally just take off, and we would come home at dinner time.
Yes, you had to be in the yard by dark.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, same rules. But no, what I wanted to talk about is everybody keeps talking about how wealthy those 80 people are. It was even on NBC last night that there are 80 people who own the majority of the wealth in the world. Like,
well, they own an amount of wealth equal to half of everybody else.
Yes. Okay. And also, you keep talking about they want to cut this program and they want to cut that program because you can't afford all these subsidies. And, yes, I do believe we should cut all subsidies to oil and forget the XL pipeline. Ask Oklahoma if they want it. But if you stop and think about it, somebody out there, please do the math while I'm talking. How much is a mortgage? What is a monthly mortgage payment? How much is the car payment? And if you've got to have two, like here in Montgomery, if you want your wife to work, she has to have a car.
Right.
Two, a mortgage payment, two car payments. The utilities, especially in the winter and in the summer, when it's hot or it's cold, you're looking at $400 a month. Add up communication costs. This is now a percentage of your income.
Right. We're running out of time, Norma. You want to get to your punchline?
You've got to have $40 an hour minimum wage.
Yeah. Well, you know, the minimum wage would be around $20 an hour if it kept up with productivity. Thank you, Norma. Excellent point. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I am convinced. I mean, you know, I'm an old fart, right? I'm 63. And I am convinced that, actually, I don't feel like an old fart. And it doesn't seem like an old fart to me. And I am, when I when I look at many of my peers, I mean, I'm pretty active and I'm in pretty good shape, I think. And I think that's because I was active as a child. And it's just right across the board. I think this is just absolutely true. We need to stop bubble wrapping our kids. And I can tell you, Louise and I did not bubble wrap our kids when they were growing up. And that was the 70s and 80s and not so much the 90s. By that time, I think they were all out of the house. But, anyway. Shotzi in Lexington, Kentucky. Hey, Shotzi.
Hey, hi, Tom. I'm listening and, I have to tell you that I somehow have become this person, this bubble wrap mom.
Really?
Yeah.
How did it happen?
I don't even understand. Well, I don't know, but I appreciate the perspective of letting go. And, I have four teenagers and, I was not raised to be coddled. And so I really don't know how I got so messed up. I really don't.
And it seems to me that, I told that story of that time that I came home from my friend Jerry's house really late and my mom was, riding my bicycle down toward Jerry's house crying, worried about me. If we had cell phones back in those days, I think I would have had even more freedom than I had. And,
it's bad now. I mean, we can, not that I do this, but you can like GPS track your child and, I'm disgusted by the whole thing. I mean, myself included, and I try to let go, but I don't even know what I'm afraid of, tell you the truth. I mean,
well, we've had fear shoved down our throats. I mean, fear has been fear is like the driving thing on television. Fear drove us into the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Fear of the bad guys who got us on 9/11. Fear drives most of our television programs, all these cop shows. They make you think that the entire country is filled with crazed criminals. It's actually very, very rare. So, Shotzi, you might want to check out in it's January 19th's New York Times. That's yesterday's New York Times, James Brody's article, Advice from America's Worst Mom, and on this free range, the woman who wrote this book, Free Range Kids. You might find it fascinating. So
I know I will. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Steve, driving through North, is that Carolina? It's cut off on my screen here.
North Carolina.
Yeah.
Not too far from Mayberry, actually, Mount Airy.
Oh, that's great. So what's up, Steve? Thanks for listening to Sirius XM.
Well, speaking of Mayberry, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and I was a free-range kid. I mean, once I learned how to ride a bike, I couldn't be seen from dusk to dawn.
Yeah.
Except for Saturday morning. Now, I can't believe you didn't wait until noon to watch your cartoons.
You're right. That was Saturday morning. Sunday morning was when we would get up and go because it was all church shows on TV. although my mom would try to grab us and drag us off to church, and she was more successful than not, particularly in the later years. But, So you're with me on this.
Yes, and I'm not with you very often. It's probably the reason why we have so many obese kids.
Yeah.
Not that they're eating any different. Actually, they're eating better, but they're getting fatter.
Yeah.
Because they're not doing anything.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Steve, so you a conservative, me a liberal, we found something we agree on.
Yes, we did.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. Good on you. Lance in Arlington, Kentucky. Hey, Lance, what's up?
It's Clinton.
Oh, Clinton, Kentucky?
Yeah.
Okay.
I totally agree with you. I was born in 1960 and grew up in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and my parents finally gave up on me. I mean, they'd let me go out on my bicycle after school, and I wouldn't come home until 10 o'clock at night. So they finally told me, I tell you what, we'll make a deal with you. As long as you're home by 10 at night, we're cool.
Yeah.
And nothing ever happened to me.
Well, yeah, and as I got older, the time, got pushed back to the point where, it was that sort of thing. Yeah, and actually I left home when I was 16. I mean, it's just,
yeah, I kind of actually think my parents liked it that I took off and they had a little free time by themselves.
I think so too. Well, my mom and dad, I have three younger brothers. And we're all 2 years apart. Well, Steve's 2 years younger than me. Stan's 3 years younger than him. And John is 2 years younger than him. So, for my mom, she was overwhelmed. And you know, at least three out of four of us were just classic ADD kids, you know, running around crazy and whatnot. And I think that they were probably relieved. Lance, thanks for sharing your story with us. Joe in Bayport, New York. Just got a minute, Joe, a little less than a minute. A quick one?
Hey, Tom, real quick. I read a book a couple of years ago. I don't recall the author, but he coined this dangerism. And the name of the book is called Beware Dangerism. It's all about fear and how we overprotect our children. It's a great book. It's a short book. It's only about 90.
Wow. So this is like the irrational fear of things that we really shouldn't be afraid of.
Exactly. About how, you know, people are worried about their kids getting smashed off the street, but there's such an infinitesimal chance of that ever happening versus some of the real...
In the entire United States, there are fewer than 200 stranger kidnappings of children a year. On the other hand, there's thousands of kids who die in the backseat of their parents' cars every year. I mean, you know, putting your kid in your own car is putting them at greater risk than letting them go out and play it. So, you know. Excellent. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for the heads up on that book, Beware of Dangerism. I'll have to check it out. And we'll be right back, 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And I see we still have a lot of people who want to weigh in on the State of the Union, which is just great because it's going to happen tonight. But so far, nobody has called to tell me I'm crazy. I find that interesting. About the very, very Sarah Brosley ugly, the good Jeremy Scahill, during an appearance on CNN Sunday, the Intercept co-founder called out the mainstream media for giving a platform to people who profit from fear-mongering about terrorism. Take a look.
Where I think it gets into really kind of fear-generating territory is when you have these so-called terror analysts on the air, many of whom also work for risk consultancy firms that benefit from the idea of making us afraid. I don't think that CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News do anywhere near a good enough job at revealing the potential conflicts of interest of some of the on-air analysts who also work in the private sector and make money off of the idea that we should be very afraid.
Well said, Jeremy. It's good to see that someone out there is keeping the corporate media accountable. The bad, Dinesh D'Souza, a conservative commentator, is drawing ridicule this week for comparing himself to Martin Luther King Jr. on Twitter. D'Souza, who pled guilty to campaign fraud earlier last year, said, "An interesting parallel. MLK was targeted by J. Edgar Hoover, an unsavory character. I was targeted by the equally unsavory B. Hussein Obama." Unbelievable. I think it's safe to say that Dinesh brought the right-wing persecution complex to a new low with that gem of a tweet. And the very, very ugly C.B. Emery Jr. The Kentucky State Senator is under fire for proposing one of the most mean-spirited and hateful bills in recent memory. Emery's bill, the so-called Kentucky Student Privacy Act, would essentially ban schools from recognizing transgender students and would require all students to be registered as either male or female according to their biological sex. But that's not even the worst part. Emery's bill would also allow a student who comes across a transgender person in a bathroom that doesn't reflect their biological sex to sue and win up to $2,500 from their school. That's what America's transgender youth needs, right? A bounty system that rewards their humiliation. That is very, very ugly. That's insanely ugly. So, anyway, State of the Union, helicopter parents, and there's a lot of other things in the news that we could talk about as you'd like. Joe in Garrettsville, Ohio. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I was just calling in to talk about the State of the Union, but real quick on the whole helicopter mom.
Yeah, the bubble wrap children, helicopter parenting. Yeah.
Well, and parenting has a lot to do with it, but, you know, I've noticed, too, just with, you know, all the technology that's taken, you know, over the last, you know, 10, 12, 15 years or so, kids don't want to go outside as much.
Ah, because they want to stay home and play video games
the world's smaller than it used to be, I feel, for them.
Yeah.
That was for me.
They're Facebooking and Twittering and,
you know, Yeah, yeah. It's just shrank the world. You know, you can talk to somebody, you know, in China, you know, instantly.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's a very different thing from the experience of face-to-face interaction, getting out in the world, having to work out the interpersonal dynamics of, you know, okay, where do we go? How do we make decisions? What are we going to do this afternoon? Who gets to decide? I mean, there's just a lot of...
That's what makes the parents bubble wrap, because they feel like they have to do it, you know?
Right.
So
yeah,
you know,
you're right.
Kind of just thinking about that. But then going into the State of the Union, one thing I haven't really heard, like, I love the ideas. My wife and I both work. We make around 50 grand a year, and to get a tax break would be great. And, you know, I didn't hear anything about infrastructure, which I think is a huge thing.
Yeah, he's suggesting an infrastructure fund, and
okay,
because
great.
Congress won't appropriate the money, he wants to mm-hmm. float bonds, which is basically like treasuries.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like the war bonds, you know, during World War II.
Yeah, yeah. And I think all these are like really good ideas. You know, it's progressive or whatever you want to call it. It makes things better for the country as a whole. But
right.
like,
which is why the Republicans will oppose it.
Looking, yeah, exactly. That's exactly the point I'm going to make. It's like even when the Democrats were in control, both houses, they couldn't even get the government to run sometimes.
Well, the Democrats actually only had 72 or 74 legislative days where they were actually in control of both houses. Because, first of all, the first couple of weeks of Obama's first term, maybe it was the first couple of months, it was some time there, before Al Franken got sworn in, President Obama did not have the ability to overcome a filibuster. All right? So the Senate was under the control of the Republicans. They started filibustering everything. Al Franken finally gets in, and 74 days later, Ted Kennedy dies. And so there goes your majority. And then Ted Kennedy gets replaced by Scott Brown, you know, who's part of the filibuster machine. So out of the last 6 years, the Democrats had 74 days. And when you look at the things that they got done, I mean, the middle class, the largest middle class tax cut in history, saving Chrysler, saving GM, turning 800,000 monthly job losses into monthly job gains, increasing education spending, decreasing student loan costs, strengthening hate crime laws. I've got this on a card here. I've got a whole list of these things. They expanded CHIPS, the Children's Health Insurance Program. The child labor laws were enforced. Wall Street was reformed. Credit card reform. Predatory lending to soldiers was restricted. The troops got paid for stop-loss time. He stopped torture. He increased VA spending. Put women on submarines. Equal pay for women. Nuclear arms reduction and disposal. BP agreed to pay $20 billion. EPA was strengthened. 9/11 health care funding. Don't ask, don't tell was repealed, and Obamacare happened in 74 days. That's pretty spectacular, actually.
No, and I agree. Like, there's a lot of things that have gotten done, but I'm saying, like, moving forward, now that you have a Republican majority in both, I don't even know how any of those things get done. Like,
right? Yeah, like, they don't even get to the floor.
Like, okay, we're not conservative anymore, or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just don't. I like the ideas. I think they're great. I just don't understand how they're going to go into action, I guess.
Well. We'll see. I mean, I think that at some point, the Republican Party, and I think that Mitt Romney coming out and saying he's concerned about people on welfare, he's concerned about poor people, you know, over this last weekend when he was at that Republican retreat or whatever it was, I think that that's a sign that the Republican Party is having that Harry Truman moment. And you've got the clip, Shano, in there someplace. I don't know if you can easily find it or not. But Harry Truman famously said, and he said it in many different venues and many different times, but he would say, you know, every 4 years, the Republicans start behaving like Democrats just long enough to get elected, and then they go back to behaving like Republicans. And so we may be at that point where the Republicans, if they're going to put a, quote, middle-of-the-road candidate up, a Mitt Romney, a Chris Christie, a Jeb Bush, who I consider all to be flaming, screaming, crazed right-wingers, but still, they're not as crazy as Ted Cruz. They're not as crazy as Rand Paul, for example. If the Republican Party is going to put up their so-called moderates, they're going to have some legislative accomplishments to point to for that. And so maybe they'll go along with some of the stuff. And I think Obama's trying to craft these things in a way that the more rational Republicans will actually support them. I mean, he's got a couple of Republicans on board with a couple of these things. So we'll see. We'll see. Joe, I got to move along. Thanks a lot for the call. Matt in East Jordan, Michigan. Hey, Matt.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. No, I guess good afternoon. I thought I'd relate my childhood story to you just to show how greatly things have changed and how things, what would be considered acceptable in the past and unacceptable now. My parents were big-time right-wingers and NRA members. My dad built a bomb shelter in the backyard. He claimed to have friends that were Omega 7. I know he had some of these Cubans that ran away actually got elected into positions where I grew up. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the reason I tell you this is because reflecting their ideas, the day that John Kennedy got shot, I announced to our public elementary school that I thought it was a good thing, which led to me actually getting expelled from kindergarten.
Wow.
And the upshot of that was my parents got really angry at the public school, and they started sending me to a Lutheran private school for several years.
Right.
And what that necessitated, the Lutheran public school, this is in San Diego, downtown San Diego, was some 30 miles away. So I had to walk about 3 miles each morning down to catch the city bus. I made three city transfers, or three or four, and then, of course, it was 3 miles back in the afternoon. My training, my dad, and I think my mom once, they took me once on the buses to do this, and I did this for years.
And this is when you were, like, under 10 years old?
Well, how old were you in kindergarten, 5 or 6?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so this is when you were
when
6 years old.
I was in kindergarten, Tom.
Yeah. Amazing.
It was no big deal. By the time I got to be 8, I mean, I was a veteran at this.
Yeah.
We moved out to the county, and that we went to a different school, but they didn't think anything of it. And I had, fortunately, I never had any bad experiences. I didn't think anything of it myself either, being young like that, other than I was tired from the walk in the evening, you know?
Yeah.
And, of course, even there in San Diego where you got long days, I mean, it was practically dark year-round when I got home.
Right.
And, it's you know, I mean, San Diego's not like Detroit or whatnot, but it's a big city.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they didn't think anything of it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm wondering when this started, because we've had people call who grew up in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, and in the 90s, who are all saying, well, you know, that wasn't my experience. And it's been 14 years now since 9/11. I'm wondering if 9/11, you know, if this is part of our national post-traumatic stress disorder from the horrible way that Bush handled 9/11. By basically just pounding us all with fear. I'm just thinking out loud, but like, I would be really interesting to hear from somebody who was not a bubble wrap child in, say, 99 or 2000 or 2001. But we'll see. Matt, thanks a lot for the call. When did this helicopter parenting really kick in? I don't know.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
But whenever it did kick in, I don't think it's a good thing for kids. I just don't. And welcome back. Corky in Rochester, New York. You wanted to talk about the State of the Union?
Yes. I want to see him come up with the credit default swaps and all risky investments on Wall Street. I want to see him come out with something addressing bundling of mortgages where it's illegal. If you sell a mortgage, you have to service it for 10 years.
That's a good idea.
Huh?
That's a good idea. I mean, I remember all the mortgages that Louise and I had back in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, the bank kept them. I was paying the exact same bank that I had originally borrowed from throughout the I don't think we ever owned a house more than 6 or 8 years, but throughout the time that we owned that house, you know, yeah, we should go back.
Yeah, because
it worked.
They're taking all the profits when they sell the mortgage, right?
Right.
And then they bundle it in a bundle and sell it to somebody else. And I also want to see something done with the rating agencies of these investments.
Yeah.
If they misrate, they should have to pay taxes in retrospect.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with the oil speculation. Yeah. If you buy oil and you don't take possession of it within 90 days, if you don't take possession of the oil you purchased, then you're going to pay a tax on that.
Well, that should be true of any commodity.
Yeah.
I think that we should go back to the old rules that we had before the Commodity Futures Modernization Act in 99, which said that if you are going to buy futures on commodities, you have to be willing to take delivery.
So you see how this country has gone downhill since they started this gambling? You just referenced 1999 this went into effect.
Right.
How much has this country been damaged since 1999?
Oh, it's mind-boggling. It's just mind-boggling. And it's continuing. You know, I mean, the legacy of Phil Graham on top of Reaganomics has just has devastated this country.
And we got to get back to what we used to do.
Which was?
Regulate the financial markets.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you.
You got to put up, you can't have a football game without boundaries.
Yeah. Hey, Corky, were you raised as a bubble wrap child or a free range child?
I was free range, but my mother thought she had a bubble wrap.
Oh, interesting.
She had an empty bubble wrap.
Yeah. So you
We had woods at the bottom of the street. I lived in a neighborhood, residential neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And at the bottom of the street was about a quarter mile wide range of woods along the railroad tracks.
Yep.
And we used to go down there with our BB guns. We played cowboys and Indians with BB guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll shoot at you.
Yeah, well, I never did that with a BB gun. We did that with cap guns when I was a little kid. But
One kid I went to school with, who lived in my neighborhood, he lost his legs hopping a train.
Yikes.
He got drunk trying to hop a train, fell underneath it, cut both his legs off.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good.
He wound up in a wheelchair.
In retrospect, that time that Clark and I hopped that train to Grand Rapids, that was one of the things that, you know, I would not want my kids to do. You know, I look back on that and go, well, I really shouldn't have done that. That was dangerous. But, you know, other than that, you know, it was a pretty good life. Corky, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. Victoria Jones will be dropping by with the Talk Radio News Service to fill us in on the news of the day and State of the Union, all that kind of stuff. And then we'll continue our conversations. We'll be back. Unbalanced. Tom Harbin here with you, and let's check in with Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by Goats for the Old, goat.com and free-don.org to find out what's going on in the world. Hello, Victoria. It looks to me like you are in the basement of the White House.
I am in the basement of the White House, indeed.
So what's going on?
Well, let me start with my light story, because we never get to them. Splash Data has published its top 25 worst passwords ranking for 2014.
Okay,
listeners, since the first edition in 2011, 123456 and password have consistently claimed the top two spots.
You mean people still use the word password as their password?
Yes, and 123456 is the number one password.
Oh, my goodness.
QWERTY is number 5. Dragon is number 9. Let Me In is number 13.
Really?
Mustang is number 16. 696969, I don't know why, is number 22. And Trust No One is number 25.
Incredible. How do they know this? Whose passwords did they hack to find this out?
They are actually, interestingly, a publisher of online password management solutions.
Well, now, wait a minute. Do I want to give my passwords to a publisher of online management solutions if they're going to print them in the New York Times or something?
They're just going to, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you have 123456789, which is the number 6 password, then you deserve it.
Yeah. Well, okay. Thank you, Victoria. I've got to go change all my damn passwords.
Yeah.
All right. You outed me. So what else is going on in the world?
Well, it was very quiet here earlier in the basement of the White House. There was an air of hushed excitement. I was here. There were very few reporters here as we anticipate the president's State of the Union address at 9 Eastern tonight. Mm. But there were cameramen here and there were photographers here, and they were all chatting and, you know, talking to each other. But reporters are starting to trickle in now because they know they've got a long night ahead of them.
Yeah.
And the president is having lunch with a lot of bigwig news anchors, as he does. So he'll be talking about what he's going to be talking about. And meantime, we're going to talk about a little bit of what he's going to talk about. He's going into his seventh year, so he's looking at his legacy. He's also looking at setting things up for his successor and for the 2016 Congress, but he also still wants to get stuff done.
Yeah. Now, in your newsletter, you suggested some things for drinking games for tonight. I wanted to add some. I'd love to hear those, but I also wanted to add something, and that is a special bonus. In fact, I'm not going to do one of Mitt Romney and say I'll write the check, but a special bonus if Joni Ernst mentions the fact that her family took $400,000 in government welfare because the in farm subsidies, that she is, I mean, literally the welfare queen.
Well, that is about as likely as the Tea Party response being fair and balanced.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, that's so not going to happen.
Yeah.
The drinking game, I think people are starting to think about their drinking game. I'm suggesting middle class. But I think you could get hammered real quick with that one as your drinking game.
I think
suggestion.
You're right.
Yeah. So you might.
And jobs.
Jobs.
Yeah.
Oh, jobs.
And taxes.
Taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
tax cuts, in fact.
Tax cuts. There are a lot of ways to get hammered real fast unless you want to have sparkling water or another sort of.
Yeah, we can just get well hydrated.
Well hydrated. Exactly. Exactly. President Obama is going into this with a bounce. There's two very reputable polls, ABC News, Washington Post poll, and an NBC News, Wall Street Journal poll. Both have him with very nice bounces in approval ratings across the board, really, on just about everything, except on Obamacare. Washington Post poll shows that the public doesn't support him on some of his Obamacare stuff, but by and large, everybody seems to be flocking to him, and millennials who had moved away from him are coming back to him.
Which is
interesting. So he's feeling very energized, and I think we're going to hear about his tax plan. I think we're also going to hear quite a lot about cybersecurity tonight as well, and also quite a lot about counterterrorism, and, of course, with the taking of two hostages, which purportedly is by ISIS, two Japanese hostages, video out today. I think we'll hear more about that. And then, of course, we've got an attack on the capital of Yemen going on, and we had the attack on Charlie Hebdo. I think we're going to hear quite a bit about that.
I hope we don't hear about the Japanese guys, because I think that just feeds ISIS. That gives them what they want. They want publicity.
Well, he may be very careful about this. He may go that route or not.
Yeah, we'll see.
It'll be interesting to see what he does. Yeah. So it'll be an interesting night. Other things going on. The Supreme Court gave a unanimous ruling today. Doesn't often happen.
Mm-hmm.
Ruled that Arkansas must accommodate a Muslim prisoner's request to grow a beard, as he said his religion requires. Samuel Alito said that Arkansas prison officials have violated a federal law passed to protect religious practices from policies set by state and local officials. Basically, the inmate, Gregory Holt, who's serving a life sentence for slitting the throat of a former girlfriend and stabbing her, said, look, I want to grow a half-inch beard. I'm compromising with you because the Quran says that you shouldn't cut your beard, but I'm saying I'll cut it, and can I do it? And he wrote his petition basically in pencil, and the prison official said he could hide anything in it. And during the arguments, the justices were incredulous, saying, what's he going to hide, a minigun?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And that's pretty much what they're saying in the opinion, that it was ridiculous.
Yeah. Very interesting. I mean, because then it gets to things like, you know, are you going to have to require them to shave their heads, to shave their pubic hair? I mean, it goes on and on.
Right.
Amazing stuff. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
It's always great talking with you. And I look forward to your observations tomorrow on what happens tonight.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, some news, some thoughts, some ideas, some opinions. The opinions. Can I say who it was who texted? Oh, Danielle's dad just texted and said, I think that when the whole bubble wrap helicopter parent thing started was 1974, when Adam Walsh's father, or was Adam Walsh the kid or the father? He was the kid. When Adam Walsh was kidnapped and murdered, and his father, Joe, became the pitchman on TV for America's Most Wanted and all these programs to basically bubble wrap your kid and find the predators. And, you know, I'm all in favor of finding the predators, and it's a terrible thing what happened to Adam Walsh. Oh, it was 81? Okay. Oh, he was born in 74, so he was, but he was kidnapped in 81 and killed. So, and that's when it became a big media thing. Now, maybe we escaped this. I'm not sure. I'm thinking back because our youngest, when she was 13, as I recall, she said, I don't want to go to school anymore. We were living in Atlanta. We were living in the Atlanta suburb of Marietta at the time. And Newt Gingrich was our congressman, and he was running for Speaker of the House, and he was going to be the education speaker, and the school that our youngest daughter went to was probably the best school in the county, just by coincidence of proximity. And so they figured that if the television cameras showed up to see how Newt's ideas on education played out in his own congressional district, that's where they'd go. So the school made this rule that the kids were not allowed to talk between classes. They just had to walk from class to class so that when the TV cameras showed up, you know, Newt's school would look like all these kids were just so enthusiastic about education. Well, because they weren't allowed to talk, they started hugging each other. And not only did they hug each other, but this was middle school, right? This was junior high school, what we used to call middle school. So in middle school, kids tend to hug their people of the same sex. They're hugging their best buddies. You know, maybe in high school they would have hugged the opposite sex, but still, you know, it's middle school kids, right? 12, 13, 14. And our daughter was involved in actually organizing a hug-in. And so Louise and I get dragged down to the school, and the principal and the teachers, they said, you know, come, but don't bring your kid. And Louise was just absolutely adamant. You know, she is coming with us, and she is going to sit there, and you're going to talk to her, and as well as us, and we will support her. And the consequence of that was that she just decided, screw this public school thing, and you, mom and dad, are going to homeschool me, which we ultimately did. Actually, we quite rapidly did. We did it through a school in New Hampshire called Oak Meadow. Oakmeadow.org is the school. It's a Waldorf or a Steiner's Montessori or Waldorf. I mix them up, but it's a really cool school for homeschooled kids, secular, you know. But she had completed high school by the time she was, as I recall, 17, and she started taking college classes. About 2 hours away in another state. We lived in Vermont. She was going to college in New Hampshire, and she was, you know, driving both ways a couple days a week, and she would spend 3 days in New Hampshire and then come back. I mean, she's 17 years old. We were not helicopter parents, although I was concerned about that long drive, but she was a very, very good driver and still is. But on the other hand, I had no idea that Adam Walsh had been kidnapped, because in 1978, we got rid of the television. And at that point, our youngest had not even been born. And we did not get a television back in our house until 2003, the year that I started this radio show. And we only got the TV because it was necessary to see the news, know what's going on. And I mean, if you're going to do a radio show, you got to, you know what's in the media. But we raised our children without television, which means that Louise and I had no television. So we've got this giant hole. People say, hey, did you remember that TV show, with fill in the blank, Fonzie or whatever, who's the guy, Dancing King, whatever, the disco duck. What was his name? Yeah, John Travolta. You know, I have no recollection of any of that, because it could be that we just weren't part of the zeitgeist of the culture that got the heck scared out of them. Or it could be that it came along later. I don't know. Anyhow, so we'll continue with your commentary on that. A couple of quick heads ups here. I don't know if the president is going to speak about this tonight in his State of the Union address, but this seems to me like a really big deal. And that is that the Republicans in Congress, who now control the House and the Senate, are preparing a so-called net neutrality legislation. This is sort of like Comcast running ads on NBC saying, oh, we love net neutrality. Right. Except that their lobbyists are working against it. And historically have, anyway. So Senator John Thune and Congressman Fred Upton are going to be pushing this. I'm reading from Candace Clement's piece from freepress.net. Tomorrow, Wednesday, both the House and Senate will hold hearings to discuss open Internet rules, and Senator John Thune and Representative Fred Upton will be pushing their fake net neutrality legislation dubbed Title X as a solution. But here's the thing. This bill is no solution. It's a big, big problem. The bill is a loophole-ridden disaster. It's disguised as a net neutrality bill. What it actually does is protect the phone and cable broadband duopoly from oversight. It legalizes a lot of harmful discriminatory practices by preventing the FCC from moving on its own to adopt and enforce rules. So, you know, if you're one of those folks who likes to call members of Congress and let them know your thoughts on something, it seems that the whole net neutrality thing, clearly you need to let the White House know, you need to let your congressman know, but you also need to let the FCC know. Just reclassify the Internet as a public utility, basically, you know, Title II, as it's called, Title II classification, not this Title X thing, Title X. I mean, this is a scam. And so you may want to call Senator John Thune's office or Representative Fred Upton's office and say, really? You guys really want to do this? You want to make, you know, a little handful of companies massively rich while messing with my Internet? Really? And then Lori Wallach, the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, she said 5 points you won't hear about during the State of the Union. Here she's talking about SHAFTA now, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, also known as the TPP. She said U.S. trade deficits have grown more than 440% with fast-tracked U.S. FTA countries since the PACs were implemented. That's the deficit that we have to be freaked out about, is the trade deficit. One-seventh of our economy is now owned by foreigners because of our trade deficit. It's astonishing. She writes, nearly 5 million U.S. manufacturing jobs, 1 in 4, were lost since the fast-tracking of just NAFTA and various NAFTA expansion deals. More than 845,000 U.S. workers have been certified as losing their jobs to NAFTA under just one narrow U.S. Department of Labor program. U.S. wages have stagnated. Inequality has soared. 3 in every 5 manufacturing workers who lose jobs to trade deals face a pay cut. 1 in 3 lose more than 20%. The new and improved Korea trade deal, the numbers are starting to come in. Our trade deficit with Korea has grown by 50%. 50,000 American jobs gone. And that's just item number one. There's five of them in this list. So that's the other thing. If the president is pushing fast track authority or the SHAFTA bill, the Trans-Pacific Partnership tonight, you might want to let him know how you feel about that. And if you disagree with me on this, please educate me. I don't see how these so-called trade deals have inured any benefit at all to the United States, going all the way back to Nixon.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
But they have been particularly prevalent since the mid-'80s and the mid-'90s, particularly since NAFTA and CAFTA, and now SHAFTA coming along. We've got to undo this stuff. We've got to get our country back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mark in Hampshire, Illinois, listening out on the Tom Hartman app. Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Hey, Tom. Good. How are you doing?
Great.
I just wanted to call out. Are you tired of people saying that the rich are job creators? Because people don't wake up in the morning to wonder, geez, what can I create that's going to, you know, provide jobs? Or they sit there and they go, what can I make that will make me money?
Right.
A lot of times when a person in a garage creates something and they can keep up with the demand, they're not going to hire anybody. Even though they're making a lot of money, they're not going to provide a job as long as they can keep up with the demand.
Right.
When their demand goes over, then they think about hiring somebody. And then it's always, well, now I got to hire somebody. Maybe I'll just rise the price of my product and I'll make money off the labor.
Yeah. The one agency, the one institution that can actually create jobs out of thin air just by saying, okay, we're going to create some jobs, is government. You know, this is what FDR did in the 30s. He said, okay, you know, we're going to build roads. We're going to build bridges. We're going to replant forests. We're going to hire people. We're going to pay them with tax dollars. We're going to create jobs. But businesses don't do that. Businesses only hire people when there's demand for their products or services.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the person would just keep making the product themselves as long as they can keep up with demand and hire nobody, and hey, they're making a good dollar.
There you go. Excellent point, Mark. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman app. David over at TomHartman.com in Miami, Florida. Hey, David, what's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Hey, David.
Hey. So, yeah, I'm sorry. Let me step off for a minute.
That's quite all right.
Trying to give a little...
I understand. People listen on speaker, and then they get kind of blindsided when I say, hey, you're on the air.
Well,
what's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm gonna... No, I was trying to catch you on what you were talking about earlier. About the kids on
sure,
their own.
Sure, go for it.
I've called into the show before. I don't know if you had heard me, if you remember me.
Thank you for calling back, David.
Well, no, I try to listen to you every day.
Thank you.
But you're talking about as far as kids having independence out there. Yeah, I agree with you completely on that. But, of course, you understand parents' reactions. I mean, there are some dangers out there as well.
Yeah, of course.
I'm 6'4". 400-pound black man, okay? Or that's what people call me when they see me.
Mm-hmm.
And we know the dangers that are in society that are on there now.
Yeah.
Social conditioning, what can I say? But in my childhood, I basically grew up in the rural area, just like you and your friends. So you imagine what kind of reactions I got if I had to carry a BB gun down the street.
Oh, yeah, that would not be good. Yeah, it really, to some extent, this conversation that I've initiated is really more a white privilege conversation, isn't it?
Well, it is very much, but let me go a little further, Tom. We were the only ones of color there,
The
remote areas. We had woods around us. My father and I were hunters and shooters.
Yeah.
And just to give you the idea, we were sort of hillbilly type. If we saw some good game outside, we could shoot them straight out our window.
Wow.
That's where I grew up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
that's
a different world when I have to walk out and go down the street. I don't have that same comfort and privilege.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. So, yeah, I hadn't. This is the problem of white privilege, is that you don't consider people who don't have white privilege. And you're absolutely right, David. Thank you for that. Thanks for that reality check and for the call. Great to hear from you. We'll be back. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars. David just called and said something that was very thought-provoking to me. He talked about how he was growing up in a rural area as an African American, and the only one in the area. It was a largely white area, and he got out a lot. But he said, you know, can you imagine if I was running around with a gun, with a BB gun? And it suddenly hit me that at a certain level, this conversation that we've been having about helicopter parents and bubble wrap kids and all this kind of stuff is really a white privilege conversation. Because, you know, black kids out alone, the risk is not, the risk that white people worry about is some child molester is going to snatch their kid and rape and murder him like it happened with Adam Walsh. But for parents of color, it would be my kid's going to be stopped by the police and shot like this little boy was in Cleveland a couple of weeks ago, which is interesting. So, yeah, I just to toss it in there. Emily in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Emily, you wanted to talk about bubble wrap kids?
Yeah, so I'm a mom. I have kids that are 4 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
And not for nothing, like at least within the past year or two, I remember incidences where people have gotten arrested for leaving their kids outside in the car when they went into a store. And not like babies who are forgotten in the car, but like a 6-year-old who was left in the car. You could see the child from the store. So there's that element as well that, like, I fear being arrested if I leave my child, you know, if my child is out of my sight.
Isn't that mostly the fear that babies are in cars that heat up to the point where babies... Go ahead.
That is a fear. That is something. But the people who have been arrested that I can think of are people who have, like, older children in a car.
Really?
That's
crazy.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that, so, like, at least in my home where I live,
mm-hmm.
our elementary schools were redistricted, so we can't walk to school. So there's one thing. Even though I live in a city where it's easy to walk or bike places, it's just too far because our elementary school is much too far for my 6-year-old to walk to.
Yeah.
And then finally, I think a lot of what happens with moms right now has to do with what I call the mommy wars. And it's all these moms who are on the internet basically throwing judgment each other's way for what they do. And you're just scared. Like, I'm afraid if I leave my 4 and 6-year-old outside to play in the backyard, that, like, the other moms on the street are going to judge me.
Wow.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, this is a tough time to be a parent. I suppose there's no ideal time to be a parent, but that's interesting dimension.
I'm all for my kids going out and playing without me there, but at the same time, like, I have never once had a parent just send their child over to my house to play with my kids in the backyard. I mean, I remember doing that growing up. I was born in 79, and we were all over the west side of Binghamton just, you know, playing.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, yeah. When do you think this all began?
I don't know. I mean, like what you were talking about, the Adam Walsh situation,
right.
That I have no recollection of that. I don't know. I mean, I'm 35, so my generation grew up playing outside and running
as
around
free
town.
Free-range kids.
Yeah. It's free-range kids. And now you see the term free-range kids. Like, this isn't the first time I've heard of it. This has been tossed around for a few years now, and I just really don't know. I really don't think it's a fear thing related to 9/11.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
I think it's the internet.
Yeah. Well, it may be. I mean, you know, there are, I think actually though, kids who stay home and don't go outside, but instead stay home and sit on the internet, they're more likely to encounter a predator than a kid who's walking around outside.
Absolutely. And not to mention, you know, that TV show, To Catch a Predator?
Yeah.
That was a really big thing as well. And I don't know if that's still on, but parents may be seeing that.
But in that show,
that type of thing.
That show was mostly about getting old guys to hook up with 14, 15-year-old girls, I mean, or 12-year-olds. I mean, that was not that was not 8-year-old, or maybe I only saw two episodes of it. I mean, I've only seen the show a couple times in my life. But wasn't that more young teens as opposed to older?
Older kids. Yeah, I mean, I only saw it a couple of times also because it's not worth watching more than that.
Well, you kind of get the idea after the first or second time, you know. And then
right,
it's like, yeah.
Right. So I don't know. But as a parent with young kids, like, I really want my kids to go outside and play. Like, I want nothing more than that.
Yeah.
And there's just, it's almost not available.
Wow.
As crazy as that sounds.
Well, do you discuss this with other moms in your neighborhood?
Yeah, I mean, I actually haven't, so it's a good point. Like, I should be discussing it with other moms in the neighborhood.
Yeah, because you may find that that other moms of kids your age are thinking the same thing you are, and they're afraid you're going to judge them.
Yeah, it's totally true. I'm kind of new to my neighborhood, so but it might be like a good like starting point.
Yeah, it could be an icebreaker for conversation. Not making an assertion like, "Hey, I want my kids to go out, you know, run around." But what do you think about this? You know, this bubble wrap kid versus free range kid thing.
Maybe we can change the world.
There you go, or at least change your neighborhood. That's great, Emily. Thanks so much for the call and
thank you.
And for being a parent. It's one of the most important jobs there is, and for listening to KABQ.com. By the way, the book is titled Free Range Kids, How to Raise Safe, Self-Resilient Children by Lenore Skenazy. And the article about it is by Jane Brody in yesterday's New York Times. The headline is Advice from America's Worst Mom. And, of course, America's Worst Mom is in scare quotes. You know, it's in quotation marks because, you know, clearly she's not. Or maybe she is, according to Child and Protective Services. 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
We'll be back with more of your thoughts on everything from global trade to the State of the Union to bubble wrap kids right after this. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And the place where despair is not an option. Well, this is fascinating. The mayor of Paris intends to sue Fox News. Sean Hannity the other day going, there's no go zones in Paris where nobody can go in if they're not Muslim. Even the police, even the fire department. You know, Fox News later walked this back. Although, in my opinion, not after an enormous amount of damage was done. And probably, I mean, they walked it back over the weekend. They hit it really hard during the week. Probably most people don't even know about the apology. And I'm guessing that that's why the mayor of Paris says, you know, we're going to sue. She says the channel insulted her city, Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo. She said, when we're insulted and when we have an image, then I think we'll have to sue. I think we'll have to go to court in order to have these words removed. The image of Paris has been prejudiced, and even the honor of Paris has been prejudiced. Wow. So, and this also a Democratic Underground. The preview for the State of the Union. Orrin Hatch has already said that Obama's plan to close loopholes for rich people, principally the Romney loophole that lets rich people who are banksters pay a lower tax rate than rich people who are just like brain surgeons. He says that that is class warfare. Right. Right. Anyhow, a lot of calls. A lot of people want to get in this conversation on everything from bubble wrap kids to the State of the Union. To John in New Albany, Indiana. Hey, John, thanks for listening to Sirius. What's up?
Excuse me. Yeah, I was listening to the radio a while ago when the guy was talking about some things that might come up on the State of the Union. And I believe he brought up the infrastructure tax proposal. And I was just thinking about the fact that you'll hear the Republicans bemoan the fact that there's I believe the last time I heard a number, it was like $2 trillion worth of expatriated profits that are parked overseas, and they're a lot of the people are trying to, CEOs are trying to get that money back into the country tax-free.
Right.
And I thought that since Obama seems to be in the accommodation mode, maybe what he ought to do would be to allow that money to come back in tax-free, but only under the avenue of getting it into tax into infrastructure bonds.
Yeah. So, here's the thing, John. I mean, we saw this movie before. They did this during the Bush administration, as I recall, and, you know, where they had this so-called tax holiday where corporations could repatriate money at, as I recall, it was 5%. And a lot of money came back into this country, and what most of it was used for by these corporations was to buy back their own stock so that their stock value went up and their dividends went up so that all of their senior officers took huge bonuses as a consequence of that because they're compensating themselves now with stock options. So it was not a good thing. Anyhow, thanks a lot for the call. Oop, I'm sorry, I hit the button and dumped you faster than I intended to. One thing I did want to share, we were asking when did people start freaking out? This is something I had totally forgotten about. In 1979, a young man in New York City, one of the boroughs or burbs or whatever, went missing. He was 6 years old, Etan Patz, P-A-T-Z, and he was the first kid to show up on a milk carton. So maybe we can track this back to 79, the milk carton kids. I don't know, an idea. Mike, in Brooklyn, New York, you wanted to talk about the State of the Union?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this human trafficking that's going on in America where the private prisons are being funded by the state to house these human beings that the police are directed to arrest. And it took us out all the way through the, what do you call that, through the system.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm absolutely with you. I think that it would be wonderful if the president would come out and say, it is crazy that the United States, which is supposed to be the land of the free and the home of the brave, has more people in prison than any other country in the world, both in terms of absolute numbers and per capita numbers. Even the wild dictatorships, we've got more prisoners than they do. And it is time to take the profit out of the prison industry and out of the arresting industry. And he's already done a little bit of that. Eric Holder dialed back the ability of police departments to basically, if they stop you and they think that something you're doing something illegal, steal your car, steal your money, steal whatever is in your car, steal your home. I mean, police departments all over the country do this on a daily basis, and it's almost impossible to get your stuff back. Only about 1 in 10 people who actually make an effort to get their stuff back, get it back, who have never been convicted of anything. You know, the police departments are using this for everything from parties to MAC-10s. And it's nuts. It's time to change this. You're right. Mike, thanks for the call. Howard in Utica, Michigan. Hey, Howard, you have a story about why kids became bubble-wrapped?
Hold on a second. Let me get you off speakerphone here.
Thank you.
Okay, yes. There was something called the Oakland County Killer in the Detroit area back in 76, 77.
Uh-huh.
That totally changed things for parents. The media played about four kids over a two-year period were abducted and killed. They never did find the killer, and the media played it up like nobody's business.
Yeah.
That totally paralyzed parents in the area. I was a circulation manager. I used to hire the little 12-year-old kids for paper routes. And by 77, we couldn't find carriers to save our souls. And every time we would go out to talk to kids on the streets, the police would stop us.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's how bad it was.
That's interesting.
In fact, as I recall, the media put out that they thought that the suspect had a gremlin, a blue gremlin. And after that, sales of gremlins in the Detroit area dropped like a rock.
Yeah, I can imagine. Huh, fascinating. So there were apparently or probably multiple variables that led into this. The, you know, John Walsh, is it Joe Walsh or John Walsh? Joe Walsh, you know, becoming a TV star and developing an industry around missing kids. The milk carton thing where most of those missing kids on milk cartons were actually the result of bad divorces. The vast majority of kids who are abducted, in quotes, are abducted by a parent, over 100,000 of them a year in the United States, whereas it's only 100 and some odd kids a year who are abducted by nasty guys like the guy you're describing in Detroit. That's fascinating. So it's been a cumulative process. It's sort of like it's time for us to shake our heads and go, we're going to wake up from this bad dream and give our kids back their freedom. Thank you for that, Howard. Thanks for the story. Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark, you've got something to add to the conversation here. Thanks for listening to CPT.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I think 1981 sounds right because that would mean it started with Reagan, and that would be and that would mean
everything wrong began in 81.
Well, I think that the Republicans did in fact try to monger and foment that fear because they tried to say that, like, look at the world that the liberals created, that now you can't even send your kids out anymore and that kind of thing. And I think they just benefit from mongering fear. But I think there's already a generation of kids who was grown up with that kind of parenting, and those kids I think tend to be less worldly, lacking in worldliness, lacking in self-reliance, they tend to be fearful of, I think, of people, of the world, of people, and I think they tend to be much more selfish, and I think that's also encouraged a lot. And I think you're right for shaking your finger at younger people, as the old codger, I think actually really every generation does become a little more sheltered and pampered and more self-indulgent as a result of technology gaining increasing dominance of our lives, and then because of the consumeristic context in which the technological advances are brought to us. And so I think that the kind of parenting that kind of parenting is actually very self-indulgent and is kind of selfish. I think it's kind of like parents thinking only about their own anxiety, and it's almost like they would be willing to cut their arms and legs off their kids so they wouldn't have to worry about where they are.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fear driven, but you're making a good point, and it's interesting. And now that you're saying this, I'm thinking, over at the TV studio where I worked, we don't have any millennials who are working here in the radio studio, but there are a bunch of young kids who are working in the television business. It's entry into show business kind of thing, and kids in their early 20s, just fresh out of college. And some of them are quite mature and quite adult, but it constantly surprises me how, I mean, when I was 22, 23 years old, we had one child, we were starting on our second. We had already started two businesses. I mean, Louise and I were out in the world. We were growing up. We were adults. And a lot of these kids in their 20s, their first half of their 20s, seem to me occasionally, and again, this is the old codger thing, but on the other hand, wisdom is experience tempered by, or is knowledge tempered by experience. It comes about as a result of time. I wonder if what I'm seeing are the bubble wrap kids, the immature ones. It's interesting. Mark, thanks for the provocative comment and observation. We'll be right back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And it is John Walsh. It wasn't Joe Walsh. But that's what does it matter? When did this start? How is this going on? What do we do to reverse it? Welcome back. Yeah, Joe Walsh. Was Joe Walsh the guy who yelled, "You lie"? That was some other guy. Some other Yahoo. Wilson. Yeah, okay. Anyhow. Anyhow, Braden in Santa Fe, New Mexico, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. Hey, Braden, what's up?
Yes, hello. I called in to a comment about the bubble wrap kids.
Mm-hmm.
I started grade school in the late 50s in a mid-size southern town.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked probably more than a mile to school every day. It was considered routine. My parents didn't give it a second thought. And I loved those walks. The walks were mostly rural, through great open fields of grasses and grazing cattle. And it was some of the best time of the day for me. But I called in because I did have a really frightening experience with a person who was probably a predator walking home one day. I was by myself. I was probably 6 years old. And outside the school grounds, a few blocks away, there was an old battered car with a seedy-looking single man, middle-aged man in it. He was a white man, by the way. And I saw him from some yard's distance. I was in the field, and he was parked on the shoulder of the road. But he was watching me, and he slowly started to follow me. And I had the good sense. I had probably been warned to run, like, as fast as I could. And I didn't stop till he lost interest and the car was no longer following me. And so I wanted to record that incident, but also mostly to say I wouldn't trade that freedom, even in spite of that incident. And my parents were kind of tuned out parents. I'm not sure I got any kind of social warning or real education about the hazards of being out in the world from them.
Mm-hmm.
But I probably got enough from school teachers or the school environment. I picked it up somewhere, and I knew what was dangerous and what to be alert for and how to avoid it. But as I say, I would never trade those walks home, those two walks a day, to school and from and back from school. They were some of the best parts of my day.
Right. I wonder to what extent we are stunting the growth of our children by bubble wrapping them. I mean, it's if you look at American history, I mean, you go back 150 years ago or even 100 years ago, kids were going to work when they were 13, 14 years old. Kids were getting married when they were 15, 16 years old. They were adults by the time they were 20. I mean, there was by and large, I mean, functioning as adults. And now it seems like kids are coming of age when they hit 30. So.
Well, we live in an age of anxiety, for sure. And
yeah.
There are a lot of factors for that. But certainly one of it has to be is that we get so much more bad news.
Yeah.
Bad news used to be confined to our village or our neighborhood or our town.
Yeah.
And my parents were quite naive. They were small town Midwesterners. And
right.
I don't think they anticipated the kinds of things they would have to teach their children in order to be safe.
Yeah, yeah, good point. And there might be something very actually healthy in that naivete. I'm not sure that being afraid is necessarily sophistication. Braden, thank you for the call. Thank you for your story and your observations. And for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Minutes before the hour. It looks like they're pulling the plane, the Air Asia Flight 8501, out of the water. They found the rest of the plane. They've already been decoding the black box or listening to it. Can you imagine how horrifying that must be to be the person who has to sit there and listen to the last, 10 minutes of the life of the pilots and the people on the plane? It's just, I could not do that. That would haunt me. So, anyhow, when did bubble wrap kids start? Shano was just suggesting maybe it started with cable news. Cable news really came of age, in the late 80s, early 90s. And like I said, I didn't have television during that time. Louise and I literally did not have a television in our home from 1978 to 2003. So I don't know. But people are weighing in on that. Doug in Oregon, Illinois. Hey, Doug.
Hi, Tom.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, the 24-hour news cycle is, as it's grown, and there's more news stations out there, they got to fill that time, and fear fills the time well.
Well, and here's a thought. What if we are doing to our kids, what if we are doing to ourselves the same thing we're doing to our kids with the 24-hour news cycle and the, oh, my God, be afraid of the terrorists and all this kind of stuff, that adults are starting to behave we're bubble wrapping ourselves, saying, "Oh yeah, it's fine if the NSA listens in on everything I do, and the FBI is keeping track of all my phone calls, and Facebook knows my life, and oh, that's all just fine because it keeps me safe, right?"
Absolutely, because you know, I'm 58, so I grew up in the 60s and 70s, but you have people now who don't have the common sense, because there was a study a couple years ago that showed common sense was made from children playing with their peers without parental guidance.
Which makes perfect sense. That's how you learn how to work things out.
Right, right. Yeah. And today, there's close to 50% of 16-year-olds that are opting not to get a driver's license because they're too scared.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Well, I'm going to have to fact check that. That's shocking. Although, I mean, you know, like I said, it seems to me like the age of maturity has gone from, it was, you know, around 17, 18 when I was a kid, and now it's around 23, 24, and maybe even older than that. And it's not biological. This is sociological. This is cultural.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we can't blame this on, chemicals in our environment or something, although, you know, that is a whole other can of worms. But, Doug, thank you for the call. Thanks for the observation. A brilliant one. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Bill. State of the Union?
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, regarding this, what you were talking before, I have one worry because my daughter lives in New York, and she's been dating a guy who's one of these boat people. You know, they live on a boat in the 79th Street boat basin.
I'm one of those people, Bill.
I know. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I can tell you the boat people I know are all pretty. It's a nice middle class community of people who are really tight with each other.
Yeah, well, I'm really envious of it because all I get to see is trees. Anyway, what I was going to mention is that in a State of the Union address, he should be talking about the problem with money, and he should announce that since money is free speech, that every time there's theft of money on any level, it's a federal crime. It's taking away someone's rights of free speech.
It's a violation of the First Amendment because you cannot use that money to give to a candidate for political office.
Okay, I see.
No, no, I'm following your logic. I'm saying that's that's how he should frame it. That you know,
if
that's a good one.
Except for, you, no one ever gives a fair explanation of what money is. Nobody knows what money is.
Yeah.
They're little tiny stock certificates, and they have value based upon the speed at which they travel.
Yeah. You're right. And money is really shorthand for human energy. I mean, that ultimately is what it is. Bill, thank you for the call. That leads into a whole another much larger conversation, but I got a bunch of people who want to get in on this one, and we've only got 2 minutes left, so let me move along here. Barbara in Northampton, Mass., listening on WHMP. Hey, Barbara. You are a retired Department of Children and Family Services worker?
I was a supervisor for 35 years.
Whoa.
And I dealt with child abuse cases at night on hotline and during the day.
So you've seen that awful stuff that I was talking about that Louise and I saw, which is a whole different thing from, you know, bubble wrapping kids.
Definitely. Some horrible stuff. However, every time, what I noticed over all those years, every time there was a crisis that hit the press and made the department look bad, the standards tightened. And everybody was afraid of looking bad or losing their job. So a child riding a bike in a wooded on a wooded road that wasn't technically a state road was reported to the department for neglect by the parents.
And so this is why the Department of Children's Services in Maryland busted these parents who were letting their kid walk home from their two children walk home from a public park.
Yes, that's what I think it is. Well, 2 years ago, about 2 years ago, a 5-year-old was killed in central Massachusetts, maybe by the mother's boyfriend.
Right.
And it was an open case. The DCF worker wasn't out there often enough. That's a given.
Right.
After that, the policy became that any report that was filed for children under the age of 5 had to be investigated, even if it wasn't a child abuse report.
Wow.
Now we're going into families with kids under the age of five just because a neighbor might have filed something.
So now there's also CYA on the part of the people who are in, whose job it is to protect our kids. That makes perfect sense, Barbara. It makes absolutely perfect sense. Thanks for calling and sharing that. It's been a fascinating day today. Thanks so much for being with us. I look forward to the president's speech tonight. I'm guessing you do, too. And we will continue our conversation tomorrow on what the president said, what he had to say, and of course, all the other news of the day. And don't forget, politics, democracy, all this stuff doesn't just happen spontaneously. It's not Van Leeuwenhoek's mice. It requires you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.